Fair warning, the following contains disturbing sexual imagery and criminality. The names and identifying information of the perpetrator of these crimes and of victims have been changed to protect all concerned. Everyone listening should proceed with a thoughtful consideration of utmost caution. These are real crimes committed by real people. Human sexuality fills the space between pleasure and desperation, reflecting the limits of our flawed understanding of the most intimate part of who we are. Around us, cinematic fantasies of violence and larceny, of terrorism and despair, are presented as entertainment. And then, as we approach sexual criminality, all fantasies become guilty until proven otherwise. We come to a place where ignorance is the last stop as sex becomes crime. You have now entered Sex Crime Central. Ben Shapiro was a simple man with simple needs. He had never had a romance. He'd never had a sexual partner. But he'd arrived at an adult stage of sexual development without the ability to figure out a way that he might honorably and legally get his simple sexual needs met. There was no one to help him, and no one to talk to. His occupation? Well, Ben hasn't done much since he left the fast food joint where he'd actually worked for a whole year as a cashier. That was okay with him. He didn't really like working any more than a kid likes doing chores like taking out the garbage. Besides, he helped out plenty around the house, and his disability check paid for a lot. He was fine no matter what his family said. At present, a simple man, Ben Shapiro had a simple problem, but it seemed to get more complicated than he'd ever been able to deal with. He had the sexual appetite of an adult male that was led about by the mind of a 9-year-old boy. What could possibly go wrong? He'd been into something lately, something no one knew anything about, and everything seemed to be working out just fine. Ben Shapiro had found a place where he could be free and do what he wanted, a place known as Sex Crime Central. Ben's beginnings were challenging, to say the least. He'd been born with a rare abnormality. Rare abnormality. Now that was a term no parent of a newborn wants to hear. In Ben's case, this abnormality meant that his brain was to remain starved of vital nutrients. These vital nutrients were just that, vital. They enabled normal neural development once they got to the brain, and had they been provided, Ben would have had a perfectly normal development. But no one ever thought to check on this aspect of baby Ben, and so he grew up with a profound intellectual disability. He should have been pretty all right. After all, even with his disorder, he remained talented at basic mathematical computations, and he liked puzzles of all types. So if baby Ben had gotten the care he needed, he likely would have developed normally into a fine young man. This was not to be, not for Ben. Not ever. But Ben escaped the notice of most in his community until he was well into his mid-30s. It was then that on one day he noticed some elementary school-age boys playing hide-and-go-seek in the neighborhood, and he exposed himself to them from his front porch, yelling at them, "Do you want to suck this?" That was his first arrest. And although he got probation, he was unable to complete it, because he again behaved badly with another minor child, and he was arrested and convicted for a charge of annoying and molesting a minor. His probation was revoked, and he went to jail. Years after he got out of jail, he became enraged with his 70-year-old mother. He pushed her, she fell, she hurt herself. He used a number of obscenities as he yelled at her throughout the incident, and then he left her on the floor until his older brother came home. And the boy's mother said, "Call the police." Ben's older brother did call the police, and he was arrested and convicted of domestic violence. A few years after that, Ben was home and, as usual, trying to satisfy himself sexually so that he could maintain his twice-a-day masturbation habit. Nothing was working for him, and he became frustrated enough to try a little internet porn. In no time, Ben was working the net like a pro, finding the sort of porn that appealed to him. He reasoned that he'd never really been included by the kids at school, and all he wanted was some fun, so what could it hurt if he visited other kids on the internet? Heck, he wasn't even visiting, he was just looking at their pictures. It took a federal task force of some 30 individuals only about 3 months to catch up to Ben. Of course, he knew what he was doing was wrong. He shouldn't have been playing with himself. His mom had taught him better than that. When he was arrested, Ben didn't understand. He never understood things, really. But he did understand that he'd broken some rules. And he did understand that he was in trouble again. It was all so disappointing for Ben. He'd been so relieved to find that quiet little room named Titillation at a place where he'd felt welcome, a place called Sex Crime Central.
So I find this story quite disturbing in a lot of ways, actually, because it seems that
really
Ben,
a sex crime?
Yeah,
disturbing?
Right, I know. It seems like Ben is violent. I mean, he has these impulsive, violent tendencies. He pushed his own mother down the stairs to critically injure her enough to call the police, exposing himself to children. I mean, how was he allowed to make all of these decisions and these crimes without having more consequences, I guess?
Well, again, it's perfectly understandable you would say this. Just a small detail, he did push her and she did fall down, but not, he didn't push her downstairs, he pushed her up against a door jamb. When she fell down, she was injured enough that she couldn't get up, and she had to wait until her older son came home.
That doesn't make me feel better, but
no, I mean I'd rather be pushed against a door jamb than down some stairs. Yeah. Is all I'm saying. But I don't want to minimize it, but I don't want to maximize it either, what he did. So the first crime, you know, he...
How old was he when he decided
30s.
To... Wow.
No priors. No, I mean, society, if we're going by a history of criminal behavior, he'd had no priors. So why would we have put restrictions on him up to that point, right?
So none of this behavior started until he was in his 30s?
That's correct.
That's really interesting. Why do you think, I mean, we talk about other crimes and other, you know, offenders who commit these crimes in their teens or early 20s, but to start making these types of decisions in your 30s is sort of, I
yes.
guess it's unfamiliar to me.
And it, you know, for, in my years of experience, the first sex crime can occur at any age in a person's life. In their 30s, all the way up to their 70s and 80s. I've had people with their first sex crime in their 70s and 80s. So,
wow.
Yeah, one thing I take from that is that sexual criminality is not analogous to general criminality. Bank robbers tend to start early and keep it up, you know, over a period of time. And the same thing with burglars or people with drug-related crimes. I think that it's that's pretty typical. But sex offenders, in my experience, at least the majority of sex offenders, typically are not criminally minded. So, in fact, I would say, you know, the word that we've heard so much in TV shows and in courtrooms across America is the word predator. And I think Ben gives us a living example of someone who's far more pathetic than he is predatory. You know, he's not hunting down people to take advantage of them and using his superior wiles, and he's not grooming victims or anything like that. He's just an intellectually impaired man who is always going to be intellectually impaired and who's never, ever going to be different.
Well, and you mentioned that he had never had any romantic relationships. He had never had a sexual partner. And I know that you've used the term incel before. It was, do you consider him to be an incel?
That's a really great question.
And what exactly is that?
Okay, so an incel in my mind is someone who is in, the term refers to involuntarily celibate. And most incels will tell us that, yeah, I'd like to have a girlfriend. I mean, if I could have one, but they're all such, you know, fill in the blank with some pejorative language. They're all so stuck up, or they're all such whores, or they're all so into tall men or good looking men or good looking tall men with money that they won't have anything to do with me because I'm either too short or too poor or too something. I would say he's not that guy. I would say he's an adult man with an adult male sex drive, but the mind of a 9-year-old.
And that is having to do with his developmental issues? Mm-hmm.
So he has all the impulse control of maybe a 9-year-old, if that, because even 9-year-olds don't do stuff like that. You know, he's really, none of us would be surprised at young children of that age pushing one another. But for an adult man to push his elderly mother and to push her to where she's fallen and he doesn't help her up, that's something that a child trapped in an adult man's body might do. Because I think he still saw his mother as a powerful authority figure over him.
Yeah.
She doesn't need help. I need help. You know, what about me? And he's still very preoccupied with himself in that way. So he's not really an incel because he's never asked anybody out. He's never dreamed of asking anybody out.
He doesn't have that desire at all.
He's never initiated a conversation with the hope that maybe something would spark. I don't see him as our stereotypical incel at all. I do see him as, you know, more typical of the many Americans who are born with developmental disabilities, who are still nevertheless sexual beings. And quite often they themselves become victims of others taking advantage of them. But it is also true that many of them marry and go on to have wonderful lives. So they are sexual beings, but do we ever give a sex education to somebody like Ben? I don't think we do. We don't teach them what to do or how to handle themselves or what's okay, what's not okay. You know, in his life, he did get that one lesson, he shouldn't play with himself. His mom made that clear. But then we have to ask ourselves in our society, was that really a helpful lesson? Was that really what he needed to hear? Or did he need to learn something more about managing his sexual impulses and his sexual needs and his sexual feelings? I think that might have been far more helpful.
Well, clearly, I mean, I guess I'm surprised after the run-ins that he had with the law by the time he was this age and ultimately caught this sex crime, that more wasn't done to even prevent this. I guess it seemed like he was on a pretty violent or aggressive path already, and there was nothing really that was done to prevent this ultimate sex crime, which was child pornography, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
And
yes, it was. Well, I was going to say, I think domestic violence advocates would be shaking their heads over what you're saying, because generally they would say most perpetrators of terrible acts of domestic violence really don't get treated with the seriousness mm-hmm. that their actions deserve. But even with them, even say the normally developed or intellectually normal development found in a typical American convicted of domestic violence, even then is punishment really the question? Is punishment really the response? Because it seems to me that punishment is always a predicate of the subject matter being evil. So if someone's behaved in an evil manner, we must punish them. And I think the truth is, like, most Americans want to get married and have a good life and be happy together. But most of us get zero training on how to do that. Mm-hmm. And so we have to kind of discover the wheel on our own all over again, or reinvent it all over again. And with Ben, though, he didn't even have the ability to begin starting that process. He could have been punished, But let's take a look at that. It's generally a minimum of $30,000 to $50,000 to incarcerate somebody for a year. And if we had incarcerated, he did go to prison ultimately for his last crime. And he was there for a number of years. And while in prison, he had a few sexual partners. You have one kind or another, who took advantage of his intellectual disability in order to have sex with him. But did incarceration help the community? Did it help him go on to have a better life? Not really. Not really. It just delayed the inevitable because he was going to get out. And really, can we afford to put somebody away forever?
No.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, you just start adding up, okay, say 50,000 a year times 5 years times 10 years. We're talking $250,000 to $500,000. And that doesn't even count the front end costs of court, criminal investigation, and the wages of the judge and the expense related to the courts and the prosecution.
But in your experience working with Ben, do you think that he understood his crime and what led him to committing it? Or was he not able to? Because it seemed like the first two incidences that you mentioned didn't really sit with him as being, you know, an issue. So was he able to understand that this last one was serious? And
well, he did learn his lessons.
Yeah.
The way we would think a developmentally delayed person might learn their lessons. He never did expose himself to children after that.
Mm-hmm.
He never did push his mom or anybody else ever again. But he wasn't able to intellectually generalize to the meanings of why this is, or to really get the lesson of empathy, because he was as self-centered as, frankly, most of our adorable little children are, who, yeah, you know, are only learning how to be empathic, and that process doesn't really get completed until sometime approaching, you know, intellectual adulthood. So, you know, for him, he learned lessons about how to not get in trouble. He just wasn't able to learn enough of them to keep him from that last crime that put him in prison.
So what happened to Ben?
He went to prison, as I said. He was released. He was placed in counseling where he met this amazing counselor.
Stephen Ng.
And I was able to do virtually nothing for him. How's that for amazing? I think what Ben and the community benefit from, though, is that he will be under supervision for the rest of his life. It's a little late now to do anything in terms of prevention of the original crimes.
But because he must be middle-aged at least now. I mean, oh, into his 40s, 50s.
Yes, yes, you're absolutely right. And but he's got a monthly check-in with his supervising officer. He is in counseling regularly. So he's getting these reminders that people are looking over his shoulder. And at least he's gotten the freedom to understand that it's really okay if you masturbate, Ben. It's not okay if you look at underage photos. And because of his supervision status, he's not able to look at any kind of pornography. So he has to use his limited memories. He has to use his limited capacity to imagine.
Why do you say you were unsuccessful in helping him?
Well, you know, my idea of helping somebody is helping them to make sorts of intelligent managerial decisions about their sexuality that end up resulting in personal fulfillment and happiness and mm-hmm. and a loving connection with others, or at the very least, going on to live a life worth living. And from my developmental perspective, I haven't been able to help Ben do much of that. Now, he's better.
Is he capable of doing that?
I don't believe that he is. And I've spent a lot of time trying to, you know, help him with that. I don't think that he is able to do that. And I, you know, it's rather heartbreaking, especially if you're the parent of such a child. But I think had I come into his life earlier, and not me, of course, but had anyone come into his life earlier to help him with this, he might have been educated into embracing and managing his sexuality in a way that society would have found acceptable. And he might have been taught the more general rules. I was a little late, you know, when I came into his life for him to really, integrate those generalized rules into his heart. And I think he remains, you know, that selfish little kid like I was at that age, where my mom would say, do something. And I'd say, do I have to? And I'd begrudgingly go ahead and do it. That's kind of how he is with everything.
I guess it's more difficult for me to understand the fact that he didn't realize that by seeking out child pornography, he was doing something wrong. How did he not realize that? I mean, he had been through the system, clearly had been arrested a few times.
But not for that crime.
That's true. But it also, I don't know, maybe I guess that I think that it should be more known or universally known, as I believe it is, and why he had that desire to seek his sexual gratification in that way. I just don't get it.
Well, yeah, and maybe, you know, for a while we can all be stumped in trying to understand somebody. But I think of the old adage about how we paint ourselves into a corner. Mm-hmm. And usually we do that with the help of copious gallons of paint from religion, where we have all these rules, right, that thou shalt not do this or this or this or the other thing. In fact, and then there's really no way, no room for me to move around or to get my needs met legitimately. But with him, it was more of this intellectual disability that painted him into a corner. Mm-hmm. Because, and I can't find the right metaphor right now in my mind, but it's as if he's standing, here's one, I'll give it a try, as if he's standing on a spot and there is no acceptable other spot anywhere around him in his world. How would he express his sexuality? And that's the challenge I think that all of us have, you know, in this culture, especially growing up this time in American history, but really around the world. We are sexual beings, all of us, even the asexual among us, that's their sexuality. And for all of us to manage our sexuality, we have to be informed. We have to be self-aware. We have to be to kind of know the rules of the road, you know, stay in your lane, that kind of thing. And he really doesn't know those except by rote. Mm-hmm. You know, he has to learn them one at a time. And just when you've gone through 100 different things, then he'll find number 101. And we never talked about that. And then that's what he does. And his mother's admonition to not touch himself, to not masturbate, was her attempt at one rule covering everything, you know, like kind of like Lord of the Rings, one ring to rule them all. But it didn't rule them all. He's still a sexual being. And I think, Sir Francis Bacon, over 500 years ago, said something like, in order to rule nature, we must obey it. And Ben never learned about his nature, his sexual nature. And he never learned how to manage it intelligently. And so he was never, and still remains, barely in charge of his sexuality.
So do you consider Ben to be predatory, or do you think that his issues stem from his lack of intellectual development?
Well, as I said earlier, around the country, prosecutors love that word predator, and so much so that I think it was NBC News had that TV show To Catch a Predator.
Mm-hmm. Dateline, I think, right?
And was it? Yeah. But was that on NBC? Anyway, yeah. Whatever network it was on, it was pretty horrible because it presumed this very dark evil of people who engage in sexual misconduct. And it gets us, again, right back into that medieval structure that says, oh, it's evil. They are to be feared. These are our villains, our demons, our bad people. We need to get them and stop it. And a little bit of examination reveals that these people are far more pathetic than they are predatory, because they honestly don't know what to do with their sexuality. Ben Shapiro knew everything he was doing on the internet was okay because, in his mind, he knew he wasn't hurting anyone. And besides, no one would ever even know, even if they didn't approve. Yes, he'd exposed himself to those boys who were teasing him. And yes, one time with his mom, when she wouldn't get off his case, he pushed her and been arrested for domestic violence. He hadn't meant to hurt her. She was just old. It wasn't his fault she got hurt. Now that he'd learned not to talk to anyone, not to touch anyone, really, not to do anything with people at all, he was going to be just fine. Besides, this internet thing was the only sex life he had, and you know it, he needed sex. So when he found a happy room called Titillation in a place called Sex Crime Central, Ben settled in comfortably. He had found a home he was never to leave. He couldn't leave because there was no one to show him how.
You're listening to Sex Crime Central with psychotherapist Stephen Ng. This has been an Ng Intellectual production with original score by Octophonics, audio production by Steve Cooper, and video production by Jesse McCloskey. Follow Stephen on social media platforms at Stephen Ng MFT or visit StephenNng.com for more information. Don't forget to subscribe to Sex Crime Central and leave us a review with your thoughts on each episode. We'd love to hear from you.